You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I was actually thinking on the way in, how about this for a goal song? What you're playing right now. The baby I'm ready to go part. Do you think it would work? You can't really chant along, but all of a sudden, hold on, ready? Here comes. Okay, ready? Like, let's play it out here. Here comes Alex Tuck. Shoot, scores! No?
It's not bad.
No, it's not great.
But it... I think it, I don't know, it just, it, I want something to chant along with.
I know.
I think, like, after
that was a great
Germany,
point
I
the guys never, made this morning, I thought.
I had never really thought about that until he said that, but, like, it makes a lot of sense.
It is something where it feels better if the whole crowd can kind of, in unison, be chanting along, singing along, doing something like that, right? I mean, selfishly, I love the song. As Jeremy said, like, Jeremy's like, I like the song. I don't like it for a goal song. I totally see that. I'm better with it than he is for Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart for the goal song. But I totally understand that. And I would be totally fine. And I get it. Like, this just doesn't necessarily fit to, you know, sing along and have a chant. It is a good song, though, to get the juices flowing. And it does kind of fit when you think you're kickstarting someone's heart. When you have a goal, it's, yeah, everybody's up, the heart's going, it's pumping, crowd is into it, right? Totally fits. And I'm just a Motley Crue fan, so selfishly, totally love it. And it is kind of cool, though. Like, I think about generations. Motley Crue has been around, you know, 40-plus years. And, you know, Vince Neil, and I'm thinking last night, even when they played it, like, boy, younger generation, you know that song, right? You're younger than me. Like, I'm thinking about people like you, or even a little bit younger than you, Josh, which is, like, are you going, wait a minute, Motley Crue? Like, that's not my thing. Or are you like, no, I get it. Motley Crue, you know that song. You've heard it enough, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally know that song. Okay. And I think sports is a large part of that.
Yes.
But there was also that Motley Crue, like, biopic a few years ago.
Yes, it was.
And that
dirt.
was really good.
And it's really good.
And I'm not saying, you know, like, people my age would have seen that and be like, oh, Motley Crue, let's listen to them. But at the same time, you never know. But, like, I think that song is just so synonymous with, like, movies and sports and everything. I think it's, like, ingrained enough in culture that a lot of people will get it regardless of the generation. But at the same time, it just, it feels like a goal song, but it also doesn't because it's used in so many other ways.
So
I think it's like, it's almost, it's not that it's overplayed.
No, I get it. Yeah,
but it's like,
it's a good arena song, but not necessarily a goal song.
Yeah.
And I think that's where everybody's landing today. Motley Crue, Kickstart My Heart. And of course, they got to hear it. We got to hear it twice yesterday, but only once actually counted. I mean, how fitting, right? In a snarky, condescending, but just SMH way, how fitting was it that the first time we got to hear it, the goal didn't even count in a Sabres game, right? Like, because Zach Benson puts it in and it's just after the horn actually went or the zeros appeared on the clock. That was last night downtown at the arena. We'll talk about that today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Good morning, Sal Capaccio with you. And of course, it is a Buffalo Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. So we have a lot to get to today. This is not like a Monday. On Mondays, I go, hey, just me and you. But it is just me and you. If you want, you can call, and we're going to take your calls today. I'd like to hear your calls on kind of where you are with the Bills right now with this game. How important is this game for you? Because I have an interesting conversation I had with a Jets podcaster and talking about this game and what it means to the Bills and the Jets. I'll get to that in a little while, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. 803-0550 is the number. But keep your head and your ears on a swivel right now because Sean McDermott's going to join us sometime in this half hour. Scheduled for about 10:15, so give or take, right? Could be a little bit earlier, could be a little bit later. But Sean McDermott at 10:15 or so. This half hour, Bills head coach Sean McDermott for his weekly radio appearance. At 10:30, John Scott, sports director, Channel 2, WGRZ-TV. I saw John last night before the game. He was doing live shots outside the arena. I want to ask him about the arena atmosphere last night. I want to ask him about the Sabres. And then, of course, the Bills game on Monday night. We're getting towards that here, Monday Night Football against the New York Jets. And one of the reasons is John is a Cleveland Guardians fan. They are going to Game 5 tomorrow against the Detroit Tigers. Big win for the Guardians last night. They stave off elimination, but now it's a winner-take-all Game 5. And, of course, here I am, the evil Yankees fan, and the Yankees win. Yankees win! That's right. The Yankees win. There's John Sterling on the call. Not really, that's me. But they are headed to the ALCS against either the Guardians or the Tigers. At 11 a.m., going to get Paul Hamilton on. We'll wrap up yesterday, what he saw, what he heard from Lindy Ruff after the game, and look ahead for the Buffalo Sabres to the weekend. And, of course, your weather check with Pat Hammer. A lot of you are going down to New York. Joe's going to New York. He's playing Bethpage. And we're going to, you know, get you ready if you're going down to New York for the weekend. It's always a great weekend this time of year to go to New York, spend some time. What's it going to be like for the game? Are we looking at any rain? How cold is it going to be, if it is at all? And maybe even a peek into next week where, I mean, I'll ask Pat, but it looks like so far maybe some warmer weather coming for the Titans home game, you know, a week from Sunday. So we'll get into all that today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. 803-0550 is the number to call. Last night, down at the arena, oh, man, went to the game. It was great. Great atmosphere. Beforehand, saw the new plaza. Looked really cool. The new mural that was up there. Went in. They just could not. Lindy Ruff used the word snake bitten couple times in his press conference afterwards. No doubt it felt like it. I mean, how many posts can you hit? How many times can you have a wide open net where a goalie makes just a ridiculous save to say, how does that actually happen? And then, of course, 5-on-3, you don't score. Penalty shot, you don't score. Goal goes in at the end of the period that does not count. Just, again, snake bitten. I don't know. But here they are, 0-3, and it's just frustrating right away to start this season. Bills, Monday night at the New York Jets. I'm on a Jets podcast yesterday. My boy, Boy Green, over in Syracuse. He's a big Jets fan, Paul. He's been on this program before. He does a great podcast, a daily podcast for the Jets. He asked me to come on. And him and his co-host, they basically asked me, like, how much is, like, is there panic setting in if it's the Buffalo Bills that they lose, like, as far as record and, oh, my God, how do they need this if they fall to 3-3 and the Jets take over? And my answer to them was, look, people are going to be mad, of course, in Buffalo. There's going to be a lot of, like, very harsh reaction if the Bills are to lose this game to go to 3-3 after starting 3-0 and losing to the Jets and not being in first place. But I also reminded them, because they might not even know this, the Bills were 3 games back of the Dolphins with 5 to play last year. We had 12 games down, and they were 3 games back, and they won the division. A couple years before that, they were 2 games back of the Patriots with 4 or 5 to play, came back and won the division. It is week 6. There are still 11 games to play after this one. So no, I don't think it's any sort of can't win the division, it's panic, but man, I think the way they look, the way they play, what we've seen, that's what gets you more towards that. It's not even the record. The record is, all right, you're right there. It's 3-3. You're tied for the division. You could still win it. You go to 4-2. Now you can almost bury the Jets right away here, right? It's a way, way different game for the Jets than it is the Bills from a record standpoint, from a must-win standpoint. It's not a must-win for the Bills. It's a you must play better for us to feel better about you and for us to know that you can still win this division and do the things you're supposed to do as the Buffalo Bills. But man, record-wise, the Jets win this game, go 3-3, and they're sitting atop the Bills after 6 games. I mean, look at the remaining schedule after that for the Bills. The next 4 games, very winnable. At least they should be. The Bills will be favored in all of them. And I just don't think it rises to that. But I do think this is a game you need to win. You got to beat teams like the Jets, who are not really good right now, especially on offense. They're very good on defense, who are right there for you to be able to bury in your division and put a couple of games back. It'd essentially be 2.5 games back if the Bills do that. So that's where I am with this. But what about you? Like, what's the panic meter for you right now in the Bills winning this game, losing this game, I should say, and maybe even how it has to happen. I did an Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast with Matt Bove. Little plug here. Go check it out wherever you pod. iTunes, Spotify, WGR, Odyssey app. We did one this morning. It's also available on the Sal Sports YouTube page. You can watch us right there. But one of the things Matt and I talked about, I asked him, does it matter how the Bills look in this game, even if they win? What if they win, I don't know, 18-16 on like six field goals or something? Like, does that matter to you? And Matt's like, no, just win. And I'm generally there, but man, we still would have a lot to talk about Tuesday morning when we come over here and show up for the reaction show on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point show, right? So I do think in that regard, it kind of matters, you know, how you look as you. It's not about aesthetics. The wins count the same no matter how you look, and losses count the same no matter how you look in the standings. But I do think after the last couple of weeks, we got to see something a bit different here from this offense especially. We'll get into an injury report. Sean McDermott joins us here in a little while in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and we'll head you towards Monday night and Monday Night Football against the Jets. But let's start off with Julian in Buffalo. Hi, Julian. You're on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Hey, good morning, Sal.
Good morning.
Go Sabres, go Bills. Just want to touch on a couple things. I agree with you 100%. I am not worried at all. Even if we lose, we go 3-3, even if we look bad and have a game similar to the past couple weeks, I'm still not worried because every year we come out strong and then we go through a slump and then we have a good stretch going into the playoffs. So I feel like it's good for us that we're going through it earlier than what we normally did in the past couple of years. So I'm not worried. I do want to see changes with offense, coaching, and better schemes. It doesn't matter if we don't have that number one receiver or Khalil Shakir. Just we should still be able to scheme guys open. We don't need one-on-ones and every guy to beat their man. Can we just scheme players to get open and make it easier for Josh, get him better protection? But my real question is, what's going on with Dawson Knox? Why is he not being incorporated? Why is he not getting plays? And if we're not going to use him, what does it sell? Tell me, what can we do? What does it look like trading him money-wise, contract-wise?
That's not happening. That's not happening. His contract is not tradable. Sorry. Yeah, I don't. Okay. Just to show you, that's not going to happen because you'd accelerate a lot of. There's money there. They even restructured it like last year. Okay. It's just not going to happen. I think this can be asked about anybody really in this offense, not just Dawson Knox. I think he stands out, Julian, because of the money he's making, right? No doubt about it. But they're not. There's a lot. I mean, I'm wondering why Dalton Kincaid's not as involved. I'm wondering why Curtis Samuel's not as involved. But it stands out because of Dawson Knox's money. They do use him. He's on the field quite a bit, but they're not going to be throwing the ball. And one thing I'll say, Julian, is when he's on the field, really, what pecking order should it be anyway? Do you want him to get more passes than Keon Coleman? Do you want him to get more passes than Curtis Samuel? I mean, money-wise, it might suggest that, but, I mean, he's really not going to be, certainly not Dalton Kincaid, he's not going to be second or third on the pecking order when he's on the field to be thrown a pass to.
What pecking order should it be anyway? Thank you, Bill. Go Bills.
Yeah, you got it. Sorry, I think we have a little delay there. But, I mean, you say what's going on with him. They are using him, Julian. He's on the field. Let me get his actual snap counts here. Hold on. I'm going to bring this up. Bills have, I could do this a little bit easier. I wish I would have known it. I would have grabbed this a little bit earlier and I could have this in front of me. So let me go to snap counts. All right. Snap counts on the year, offensive percentage. Let's go to Dawson Knox. He is on the field over 52% of the time. Dalton Kincaid, 61. Dawson Knox, 52. By the way, that's higher than, I'm not going to count Khalil Shakir because he missed a game. That's higher than Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That's higher than Curtis Samuel. That's higher than who else on here? Those two receivers. They do run 12 personnel. Maybe not as much as we thought they would, but it is happening. And if he's on the field in 12 personnel, who are you throwing to? I'd rather see Dalton Kincaid get targets. The thing with Dawson Knox that stands out is the contract, right? I mean, that's why people ask a question that Julian just did, like, what's going on with him? You're paying him all this money. And I get that. I totally understand that. He's a good number two tight end. I do. I think that. A good number two tight end, though, was a salary cap hit this year of $7 million that goes to $14 million next year because of the way the money is structured. So we'll see what happens at the end of the year. But right now, I think this can be said for anybody and why anybody isn't or is involved in a certain way or not in a way on the offense. And how that goes. This is Dawson Knox. This is Dalton Kincaid. This is Curtis Samuel. This is Keon Coleman to a lesser extent, I guess. It just hasn't looked great the last 2 weeks for sure. Let's go to Mike in Orchard Park. Hi, Mike. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
You know, a lot of opinions is that the Buffalo Bills need to, you know, trade for more players, and, you know, like, we don't have the personnel in the building. But I think we do have the personnel. I just think we're not utilizing the personnel in the right spots at the right times. Like, speaking with Dawson Knox, I don't expect him to get more targets per se, but I expect him to kind of be in that tight end role when, you know, we're running the ball or trying to run screens. It just seems Kincaid, I mean, you know, I'm asking you, it just seems like he's struggling to, as blocking-wise.
Yeah, hey, I don't mean to cut you off, Mike. I'll address this in a little while. We're going to get to Bills head coach Sean McDermott, who joins us right now here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Okay. Oh, sorry about that, Josh.
Coach Sean McDermott's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Kaleida Health, the official healthcare provider of the Buffalo Bills. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by Northtown Automotive. For whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown.
All right, Bills head coach Sean McDermott joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good morning, coach. Happy Friday to you.
Good morning, Sal. Happy Friday to you as well.
All right, we are debating here a little bit this morning. You and I are about the same age. I am a Motley Crue fan. That is the Sabres goal song. Were you a Motley Crue listener growing up, Coach?
It wasn't at the top of my list, I'd say that, Sal, but I am very aware of some of their songs.
All right, I love that. Okay, Coach, obviously today is not a day where you're going to give the official injury designation for the week for guys, but you can obviously tell us if there's anything that you can give us on that. But let's talk about today. No media availability for practice, but you guys obviously will put out an injury report. How does it look for today with some guys?
Yeah, no one will be ruled out today. No updates from yesterday's report, really, and since today is a walkthrough, we'll have to see more of what tomorrow looks like.
Okay, let me ask you a couple guys specifically what you've seen from them. What do you think about James Cook, where he is at right now after a couple of days of, well, yesterday officially a missed practice, but on Wednesday when we were out there not doing as much either?
Yeah, I don't know yet. Again, we'll see. You know, I'll get a little bit more of an update from our training staff. It's kind of a walkthrough day for us, like I said, and so you don't really get a good look at what they can and can't do. We'll know more tomorrow.
And then would you say the same thing for Khalil, who looked like he did a little bit more yesterday?
Yes, for sure.
Okay, and then on the guys that were coming back, Taron Johnson sheds the red non-contact jersey. He did a little bit more with the bag. How did you feel he got through the last couple of weeks of practice? Obviously, no game last Sunday for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's knocking some rust off. I thought he did some good things in practice. We'll see. Again, at the end of the day, you've got to, when you get a player out of practice, that's one thing. Can they function enough to execute the job and the job description is another level. So that's where we're at with all these guys, and they're all in a little bit of a different position on the spectrum, so to speak.
Okay, a lot of people wondering, you know, at the running back room, kind of what you have in addition to James Cook. What have you seen in the growth of Ray Davis so far, Coach? Running, obviously catching the ball out of the backfield, blitz protection for a rookie. He's a guy that's played a lot of college football. He's a little bit more experienced than most college guys coming in. What have you seen from him so far?
Well, he's off to a good start. Limited sample due to limited touches because James has been our primary guy there. So, again, you know, that'll be affected by James's availability. And to this point, because James has not practiced this week, Ray and Ty have both been getting more touches, and I think they've been handling those opportunities well.
Sean, last week on Sunday after the game, you said you talked with Joe Brady after the game about the end-of-game situation. Then on Monday, we heard you say you guys talked more. I'm very curious, and a lot of fans have asked me, what's it like after a game as far as how you talk with your coaches, when that happens? Do you debrief about every game afterwards and at certain situations? Is it more holistically? And then does it change for a road game or a home game? I'm just curious how the protocol is after a game when you get with your coaches to kind of debrief things that have happened.
Well, it is. I mean, we talk a lot about process here, and, you know, the result sometimes is variable, right? But
yep,
if our process is right, and that's really the root of everything we do. So a lot of the conversations this week were based on that. I would say a week, you know, 2 weeks prior to this, a lot of those process conversations were on the defensive side. And then this past week, certainly a lot of those conversations on the offensive side, and just making sure that we're good. And then from a staff standpoint, communication-wise and just situational football-wise, making sure, again, that our process is as airtight as possible. And, that's what leads to winning.
You've been on different staffs. Is it different for most staffs of how they kind of treat end of game, like after you guys come in and you talk? Do some coaches say, hey, let's talk in the morning? Do most coaches say, hey, it's top of mind, we better get to it, whether it's win or lose, whether it's really great or it's not that great? Is it different, or is it pretty much uniform around the league?
No, I would say it's probably more variable than you'd think. Some mm-hmm. coaches that I've worked around never meet the day after a game. Mm-hmm. Some coaches meet every Monday after a game or whenever that day is. And, some coaches just meet with their leadership group, in this case, the coordinator group. And so it's probably more varied than you'd think, because – you know, you'd think that everyone just, hey, after a game, we're going to meet as a full staff on a Monday morning, and some don't do it at all. So it's kind of, you try and read the room, and for sure, because everything's a race every week from a time standpoint to get everything done that you need to get done, especially off of a short week, what have you. You get a little bit more time naturally on a longer week that, like we're on this week. And so that's the adjustments year to year that take place, that is the journey of a season, and how you can help a team, continue to move forward and grow and come together and improve. And I mean, I think that's one of the neat opportunities we have as coaches to do that and to do it well and to do it as quickly as possible to move our team forward.
Most of the talk from the guys that I've talked to the last couple of days on the offensive side is, hey, like, we don't have to panic and we don't have to change and scrap everything. We have to be better at what we do, but we also have to kind of examine if there are some tweaks here. What is the balance there of when you have two games like you've had the last couple of weeks to making sure that you don't kind of overreact, but make sure you react accordingly, I guess?
Yeah, that is a delicate balance, and that's been on my mind, quite honestly, a lot of this week. And leave at night. Hey, did we do enough? Did we touch base enough? Communicate enough? Have those conversations enough? And without overreacting or getting, that become a whatever we're talking about, whatever theme we're talking about, discussing. Does that then become the distraction and gets in the way of performance? So it is a delicate balance, but those conversations are important, and really it's where I'm trying to go with my routine.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Week to week, just making sure that, hey, even though my week may not be the same every week, it's more addressing the things that really need to be addressed. And so it leads for an interesting and sometimes non-routine based week for me as a head coach.
I remember last year in December, the Chargers had made a coaching change, and we talked about it here on the program, and you know how you have to kind of be ready for a team that's going to have maybe a little bit more renewed energy, a little bit more renewed focus, maybe because a lot of things are going on in their building. When you see a coaching change like happened with the Jets, is that kind of something you have to be aware of, a little bit of a matching the energy? They're going to be focused. They're going to have a little bit maybe renewed, kind of like I said, focus, I guess, is the word as you go there Monday night.
Could be the case, no doubt. You know, you never know how an opponent is going to show up. Right. We just have to assume every team's going to show up with their best every week because of what the success that we've had, because we have Josh Allen as our quarterback, and in this case, for this reason that you talked about. So, but we have to assume that every week, and knowing that we really can't control that, we have to control the things that are directly within our control, which is our level of preparation, our focus, and then subsequently our level of play.
What is the challenge of a new play caller this late in the process, Todd Downing, who you have faced before? He's been a play caller in the league, but what's the challenge now that your staff faces to making sure that you kind of pivot a little bit from Nathaniel Hackett to Todd Downing and what they may do?
Yeah, again, I mean, outside of our control, it does present an element of some unknowns. You know, week to week, what happens in this league is you get a chance to look at usually a sample and sometimes a rather large sample of a coordinator's tendencies or a coordinator with the quarterback, that partnership and their tendencies. In this case, this will not only be a new head coach, but a new coordinator, a new play caller, and, you know, linking up with a new quarterback in that relationship. So, won't have a lot to go on, so we'll have to do a really good job of trying to adjust as early as possible.
But you do have something to go on, and guys, you know they're very good on that side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers, of course, Hall of Famer. Garrett Wilson, who's dynamic. Breece Hall had a couple nice runs last year against you guys. How about the challenge of those specific skill players on that side?
Yeah, when you have that level of player, I mean, like you said, when you've got, you know, that level of quarterback in Aaron Rodgers and what he's able to do physically, mentally, and then when you have a receiver like that, and Garrett Wilson, one of the tops in the game, and they certainly have a strong connection there, those two, and then the runner in the backfield, you know, it causes some challenges to how much do you want to play with eight in the box to stop the run, and then how much do you have to, because then you're singled up on Garrett Wilson outside, so it leads for a tough dynamic.
And then finally, Coach, on the other side of the ball, I'm sure as a guy who, you know, has coached defense your whole life, I'm sure you have a healthy respect for what they've been able to do over the last several years, and here they are again at the top of the rankings.
Very talented defense. They've been really strong for a number of years, and a lot of, I would say, high draft picks, I believe, you know, in the front, and they just roll them. They're very deep up front. And then with the corner positions, we talk about matchup being a matchup game. They've got a really good corner or two back there, and so it leads to a tough matchup. So they do a great job defensively. We'll have to do a great job offensively and making sure that we're patient where we need to be patient.
All right, Coach, so walk through today and then a regular kind of a Friday practice on a Saturday with the different week. Travel to New York on Sunday. Best of luck to you. Safe travels to New York, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sal.
All right, you got it. You got it. You too. That is Sean McDermott, head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I think the most notable thing he just said there, nobody is ruled out yet for the game. I didn't expect that to happen today, but we'll see where everybody goes. They could be ruled out tomorrow. Again, nobody's ruled out. It's not a normal Friday. This is like a normal Thursday. Tomorrow's like a normal Friday. Sean McDermott right there also talking about James Cook, Khalil Shakir, kind of these guys still working today. It is a walkthrough. Nobody's going to have a change, it appears, today in their injury designation for the week, for the day. So whatever you saw in yesterday's report, I'm guessing, will be pretty much what you see on today's report. That's Sean McDermott, and of course, his appearances in WGR, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. We'll be back in a snap. It's time for a break. And of course, back in a snap is brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. And when we come back, John Scott, Channel 2, WGRZ-TV, sports director. Boy, it's a Channel 2 day. We're having the chief meteorologist on, Pat Hammer, in an hour from now. But John Scott joins me. We're going to do football. We're going to do hockey last night. We're going to do a little baseball with John Scott. Everything's on the table on a Friday here.
Great stand up right there, and it's Alex Tuck on a breakaway, shorthanded, save, scores!
Dan Dunleavy on the call last night down at the arena. I mean, the Sabres played a really good hockey game, I think, by most accounts. I think they did. Sometimes I'm watching going, I think they're playing a good game. They're out shooting the Kings at one point. It was like 25-9 or something. I don't know. Wound up pretty lopsided. They just could not get some puck luck into the net. They missed some golden opportunities on their own. There's no doubt about that. And then, of course, Anze Kopitar, he's a terrific player. He winds up with the hat trick at the end of the game. They lose 3-1. To the LA Kings. I saw my guy John Scott down there doing some live hits outside the arena. The fan fest was going on. Little party in the plaza. They had the gold carpet. They had a band playing. Had a good crowd out there. Had John dressed to the nines as he always does, going on Channel 2, WGRZ TV. Sports director joins me right now on the West Her Hotline. Good atmosphere down there last night, outside and inside the arena, wouldn't you say?
It was really good outside. I think it took the crowd a little bit of time early on.
Yeah.
Almost like they came in guarded.
Yeah.
To get some things going. But especially the McLeod penalty shot and things like that, I think that's when the energy started to ratchet up. And I think it's notable. It was not surprising the great ovation Lindy Ruff got.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised the amount of booze Kevin Adams got. And people, their responses when I put it out on social media were like, well, he kind of deserves it. So the fans making their voices heard on both sides of the coin.
Yeah, very interesting to me as well. On both counts. And, I mean, Lindy even, in case people don't know, got a standing ovation. That wasn't the case for most of the players necessarily. There was cheering, and then I think Dahlin got a standing ovation for being captain. I think some people did, but Lindy got a standing ovation. It lasted. And my wife, Yana, she looked at me. We were at the game. The new video board, by the way, we can talk about that, but she said, Lindy's getting choked up. And I looked, and he was getting choked up, John. I mean, it meant a lot, I think, for him to be in that position back in the building. It meant a lot for Sabres fans to see him there. Unfortunately, not the result they wanted last night. You've covered him now. You've been able to talk to him. I know that, you kind of got here. You didn't cover Lindy originally, right? When he was here, you weren't here yet, right?
No, I got here January 2014.
Okay.
So not too long after. They were transitioning to the true drought era that we have come to know.
Well, as someone who then did not experience that, or him growing up like I did playing for the Buffalo Sabres as a captain, what has been your kind of observation from the outside about the affinity that people have for Lindy Ruff and the connection here?
They love him, and I can kind of relate to it because the Guardians at the time, Indians, Mike Hargrove was like the Lindy Ruff of that team in the 90s. The greatest era of that baseball team's history, went to two World Series, came so close to winning it all for a city and a franchise that doesn't win championships in the sporting realm. And he came back briefly later on in his tenure. And those types of stories are always great for fan bases that especially are starving for success and can then look to a beacon of when success was pretty regular. And that's what Lindy Ruff has been. I asked him the first day of training camp how much he was maybe still soaking in what it means to be back with this team. And at that point, in that setting, he said, I'm past the nostalgia part. This is back to work. But I think last night, as you indicated, it's a different story. It's a different moment to finally have 13,000+, 15, whatever, KeyBank, 18,000, however many people are in there, show their affection all at once. It had to be overwhelming for him, but you're also then seeing the other side of it, which is what made him so endearing and makes him so endearing to this fan base. He's tough. He's straightforward. He's no nonsense. And you heard it in his comments after last night's loss.
Yeah, no doubt. And I did like the fact that he recognized as well, like, look, we played the way we should be playing. There are only a few minutes there of the game. He said, there's only a few minutes I'm going to not like about this game. Sometimes you just have a little bit of puck luck or bad puck luck. That's what seemed to happen last night. But overall, through three games, John, 0-3, you're sitting there and thinking, oh my God, here we go again. It just seems like, and you can't blame any fan for thinking, okay, here we go, another wasted season. You hope that's not the case, but I can't blame any fan for kind of getting to those depths right away already.
100%. And what were some of, you talk about people booing Kevin Adams, what are a lot of people so critical of him coming into this season? Why? Because he did not address the top six. Mm-hmm. There was so much turnover and talk about grit and the way we want to play with kind of repurposing the bottom six. But the top six, they're once again going with this plan of, well, let's just rely on the fact that Tage Thompson's going to get back to being the elite scorer. Let's rely on the fact that Dylan Cousins is going to be this great player. Let's rely on Alex Tuch having been more at the top end of his career numbers rather than maybe in the middle. That's what they did once again. And yes, it's 3 out of 82, but one goal in each, and it even kind of goes back to last year. Yeah, they dealt with injuries, and yeah, maybe the bottom six wasn't great, but the best players on the team were not the best. They did not play their best last year. Some of them, probably most of them, regressed. And you're not seeing them come out the gate in three games being showing you anything that would make you believe, okay, they're going to get back to that top form that they were in a few years ago when they barely missed the playoffs. To me, you could talk about the bottom six and the goaltending and whatever, new coach and all of that, but your best players have to be at their best. And to my eye, even dating back to last season and three games in here, they haven't been for the Sabres, and I'm going to put it on them.
John Scott on the Western Hotline. We'll talk more about the Sabres with Paul Hamilton at the top of the next hour. So let's transition here, talk a little bit about the Buffalo Bills, their game coming up Monday night against the New York Jets. Do you subscribe to, believe in, I know there's some math on this as well, the quote-unquote bump a team gets when firing a head coach and another team kind of having to be on the lookout for that, so to speak?
Sure, because it puts people on notice,
yep,
for lack of a better term, of, hey, heads are going to start rolling, decisions are going to start to be made drastically with when it comes to the head coach if we don't get our act together, if we do not perform better. And I'll be real interested to see how Aaron Rodgers plays. Is Aaron Rodgers not Aaron Rodgers because he's in his 40s coming off an Achilles injury, or is Aaron Rodgers not Aaron Rodgers because there was some divide between he and Robert Saleh? I don't know. I probably would lean more towards he's in his 40s coming off an Achilles.
Right.
But overall, maybe some guys will bump. But I was down on the Jets, lower than on the Jets than a lot of people because of that. Aaron Rodgers is 40 coming off an Achilles. And outside of Garrett Wilson, I've never been a Mike Williams fan. He's coming off a major injury. I mean, I couldn't find things that made me believe that outside of continuing to have a good defense, very good defense, why they all of a sudden would be catapulted and ascend into a conversation where they are not only a legitimate threat to the Bills in the division, but an AFC contender. I just never saw it.
Well, I would think that on Monday night, they might go back to trying to run the ball against the 32nd ranked, you know, run per play defense in the NFL. They have Breece Hall, who just hasn't been able to get off this year, but last year had a terrific game and opening night against the Buffalo Bills, opening Monday night. To me, I guess that would be their formula, but I agree with you. Like, I haven't seen anything necessarily from their offense that makes me think they're going to turn it on, and this Bills defensive line needs to be able to outperform the Jets offensive line in this game.
I think the Bills' defensive front, you could maybe go the whole team, certainly on the defensive side of things. I mean, they're the X factor. We see, with not to steal something from the offense, when the defensive line is eating, when they're constantly producing pressure and disrupting and getting quarterbacks off their spot, the defense as a whole has a different tone. They have a different ferocity to themselves, and they're more effective. And we always hear Sean McDermott, and I've heard it even other games with other broadcasters. Belichick, I believe, said it on the Manning cast the other night. The front and the back end of defenses work in unison. They work synergy. It's if the front's doing well, it helps out the back. If the back's doing well, it helps out the front. But this group, that was my biggest concern, maybe even beyond the wide receivers, and that may be a bit extreme, but I didn't know what they had there. And ironically enough, Von Miller was someone who was giving them a bump above expected. Now he is out, mm-hmm, with the suspension. You need more from A.J. Epenesa. You need to see more consistency out of Greg Rousseau. The guy pops, and you're like, okay, this is great. And then you don't see him for a couple games. You just need more consistency. I do like what I've seen from Javon Solomon in very small sample sizes. But that group, I think, is is going to be the real dictator, not only Monday night against the Jets, but moving forward for the Bills defense.
All right, on the other side of the ball, two games in a row here, very uninspiring performances from the offense. And then we obviously had the injury to Khalil Shakir in game one, the first game, I should say, at Baltimore, where he just wasn't the same. He misses, and that really just tightened the reins on everybody. Just looks to me like teams are daring them to beat them with their wide receivers and saying, you can't do it. They're sending pressure. How do they fix it? How concerned are you about these wide receivers, the passing game, and what teams are doing to the Bills right now?
Well, clearly, no one can separate, and that was the biggest concern when this group was put together. And they got away with it early on. I think part of that's opponent base. I think part of it is also simply that teams didn't know what the Bills were going to look like with this new collection of wide receivers and this passing game, and with Joe Brady fully acclimated in the OC realm. And like every team in the league does, there's gets tape out there and teams figure it out. And the opponents also ratchet it up here. And we know what the New York Jets can do as well. To me, I don't understand, dating back to even when they drafted Dalton Kincaid, why is he not a focal point? I think that was a large assumption for many people that, okay, they're pivoting away from Stephon Diggs and an alpha at the wide receiver position and maybe transitioning to this everybody eats, but maybe funneling things more towards a favorable matchup that includes Dalton Kincaid or even the running backs like a James Cook. They haven't done that. And to me, okay, week one it was, oh, they were throwing two, sometimes three people, the Cardinals, on Dalton Kincaid, and it opened up for other people. But you traded up in the first round to get him. I didn't like the move at the time because I just didn't think there were enough targets and he could be impactful enough to warrant it. And now the opportunity is there, and Joe Brady has to find ways to scheme him open and make Dalton Kincaid be the player that when they drafted him, they said that he would be in this offense.
All right, listen, tomorrow I have a much more relaxing Saturday than you because my Yankees are into the ALCS. Your Guardians have a winner-take-all Game 5 against the Detroit Tigers. And on top of that, you have your Ohio State team at the same time playing against Oregon. How are you going to manage the stress tomorrow?
I have no idea. One of my best friends actually invited me to go to the game, but I was like, I'm going to stay at home. I got some things to do. Want to prepare, obviously, before leaving for the Jets trip in a day or so. So I'm going to watch it from home. I also want to keep an eye on the Ohio State game. I don't know what to do. Like, we have picture-in-picture, but that's not going to suffice. I can't – what am I going to choose to put in picture-in-picture here?
Well, here's what I do sometimes. Here's what I do. When I have, like, the Yankees and a football game on, I'll put the football game on the TV and the Yankees just on my computer screen in front of me. So I literally have two things going. I can kind of go back and forth. It's not picture-in-picture, but there are two screens right there, and I can be a little mobile with the one if I need to move around.
I could do that. I could take one of the TVs off the wall from upstairs and bring it down. It's not that big. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we'll go out. I don't know. I have far more confidence in the Ohio State Buckeyes this weekend than I do against with the Guardians. Scooble, I mean, you talk about out of nowhere, and he's going to win the Cy Young. He was lights out against them in Game 2. And honestly, I've seen this script before where the Guardians get in these critical matchups and they face a hot pitcher, whether it's John Lester in the World Series against the Cubs, whether it's Josh Beckett or Pedro Martinez with the Red Sox. I mean, the list goes on. And Andy Pettit back with the Yankees. You just have this feeling of, okay, it's great. They finally won an elimination game, but their offense is just so frustrating. It's so inconsistent. And I just have very little faith, especially going up against a starting pitcher on a heater. But maybe the progressive feel, Cleveland magic, can will them. And if they can maybe scratch and claw one or two and make it a bullpen game, then I think I feel good. Because even though Class A is now allowed, honestly, like more runs in two games against Detroit than he had like all season, you get to the back end of the Guardians' pen, and I like to feel good, but they're a tough team to put a lot of confidence in just because they just don't look or feel like a lot of teams that are true championship contenders.
Well, I would like to thank the Guardians because if and I like I for your sake, I'd love the Guardians to win, although that would be very stressful for me because you and Josh and all these Guardian fans around. But at least by making it go five games, Scooble gets used up tomorrow, and he can't be used again in the early part of the ALCS if they win.
Right. You don't have, and if the Guardians win, you don't have to worry about any of their starters. Frankly, none of them are that intimidating. So, but it would be fun. We've had a few moments here during my time over the past 10 years where the Guardians and the Yankees or Indians, whatever, have had playoff battles. You and the Yankee crew have gotten the better of them most of the time, but I would love another crack at it. So let's hope Saturday is a double win for me and fellow Ohioans.
Enjoy tomorrow night, whatever, how you ever consume it all, and safe travels to New York, and we'll catch up, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, you got it. That is John Scott, WGRZ TV2 sports director. Paul Hamilton on the way next. We'll take a timeout, be real quick on the back end, do another timeout, and then we'll get Paul Hamilton at the top of the hour to talk Sabres and everything that happened last night. I'll get to the entire NFL schedule as well and my thoughts on each game here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Yeah, tomorrow really is an awesome sports day. UB plays Toledo at 12 noon. Sabres at home against the Panthers at 7 p.m. Got my Syracuse Orange at North Carolina State at 8 p.m. You got Game 5 of the Guardians-Tigers series tomorrow night. You got Ohio State-Oregon tomorrow night. It's awesome. And we're going to be on top of it all. We're going to talk about the Sabres and their play last night with Paul Hamilton, who joins us next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on a Buffalo Football Friday.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.